Chapter 32. Freedom and Adventure. Nestled in the foothills of the Cloudwall mountain range, on the eastern side, sat an unusual dwelling. It had a flat wooden roof and steel walls that echoed as the rain beat against them. The sides were slitted with narrow windows at regular intervals, too skinny to reach so much as an arm through. The two doors on each side opened downward into ramps, and lay open as the inhabitants busied themselves about putting the place in order. On the whole, it looked large enough to house 20 or more. In the right frame of mind, one might describe it as shaped like a sailing vessel that was missing its sails. The name on the side identified it as Daggerstrike. The captain and crew of the Daggerstrike had set down in the rolling high hills of the Cloudwall for the night, after Captain Juliana's ill-fated attempts at aerial acrobatics made a shambles of the crew quarters. There were repairs to be made. It was nothing complicated, but they were in the wilderness with no shipwright among them, so the work would take time. Men also needed a good long feel of the ground beneath their feet once more, after a harrowing flight. Captain Juliana had won herself few friends among the crew with her antics in testing out the Daggerstrike's capabilities. Going off with a pair of crewmen and killing a mountain goat for their dawn feast helped a ways toward making amends. "Captain Juliana, is a fire wise? What if we are spotted by Magrin forces?" Lieutenant Trosh Garrist asked. He was the senior member of the crew assigned to her. He might have been 5 winters older than Juliana, 6 at the most, with blonde hair and dark eyes that accused when they looked at her. "We should still be far enough south that they won't see us," Juliana replied, the title of captain before her name still echoing oddly in her ears. Owning no sort of military uniform, she was dressed in her riding leathers with a white tunic, with matching leather gloves and boots. She wore the harness for her dagger sheaths openly, outside her tunic, the blades having already been bloodied once in the appropriation of dawn feast. "Besides, how else would we cook our meat?"
"They might have scouts in the area," Lieutenant Garrist persisted,
to all appearances unconvinced that his captain knew anything about what she was doing. Heads nodded along with him.
"Look around. See any roads here?" Juliana asked.
A general grumbling of no answered her.
"Does this look like easy terrain? If they manage to spot us and sneak up for a look, so be it. They won't catch us off guard in any numbers. By the time scouts could make any report at all, we would be airborne again and long gone."
Still.
"Your name is Trosh, right? Look, Trosh, you boys are soldiers, not sailors, and I am a sorceress, not a ship's captain. We are all going to be learning as we go here," Juliana said to Garrist.
"I am properly addressed as Lieutenant Garrist, Captain."
Trosh Garrist set his jaw and stared down Juliana, or attempted to. He was met with a smirk.
"Oh, I see how it is. New girl isn't good enough for you. You don't like being bossed around by a sorceress," she said, nodding to herself as she said it.
"You do not have any qualifications to captain a ship or lead a crew, a platoon, or any other assemblage of soldiers. If you would be so good as to keep the ship on course, I think it would be best if I took command," Lieutenant Garrist replied.
"Fine, I'll make you a deal. Line up, any of you who think you'd rather have someone other than me as captain. I'll give you each a shot at me, bare fists, no magic. First one who bests me can decide who gets to captain the Daggerstrike. When everyone who wants a shot has had one, if I am still captain, everyone who tried to throw me off my own ship can walk home," Juliana offered. Though among the tallest of the Daggerstrike's complement, Juliana gave up at least 5 gallons to the slimmest of them.
"No magic?" Trosh Garrist asked, skeptical.
"How can we be sure? How would any of you take me seriously if I cheated?"
Juliana drew her daggers and tossed Freedom and Adventure hilt deep into a tree trunk, well out of casual reach. Lieutenant Garrist removed his sword belt, along with the dagger sheath it also bore, and removed a concealed boot dagger as well,
tossing it to the ground out of the way.
"I don't like the idea of hitting a woman, but everyone heard you ask for it, real clear," Garrist called out, pointing his finger and sweeping it across the crew, making sure everyone heard him.
He took up a brawler's pose, fists up, forearms framing his head as he tucked his chin low. Juliana relaxed into a fencer's posture, one foot leading, turned sideways, but with her arms hanging loose at her sides. She flexed her fingers, clenching and stretching them alternately. She locked her gaze on Garrist's. Trosh Garrist took a tentative step in, knowing better than to rush someone who clearly came prepared to fight. He threw a quick, probing jab, but provoked no flinch from Juliana. He threw another, long enough to land, but Juliana turned aside, and Garrist felt his world tilt as his feet did not follow him as he advanced with the punch.
"Hey, you all saw that," Garrist said from the ground, pushing himself to hands and knees and scrambling to his feet as quick as he could manage.
"She just used magic on me."
"Aw, Lieutenant, she tripped ya," someone called out. "You wasn't even looking at her feet."
Juliana shrugged and smiled. Garrist gritted his teeth and resumed his fighting stance, his face reddening. Whether it was anger or embarrassment, Juliana could not say. He rushed forward, not recklessly, but at least imprudently, pulling up short of bowling Juliana over to throw a hard overhand right. A slim hand closed over his wrist, guiding it wide of Juliana's face. At the same moment, a delicate knee drove itself into the space just below the center of his ribcage. Juliana pulled the blow, putting no ether behind it. She could easily have ruptured his stomach, lungs, or both. Off balance and with the wind knocked out of him, Trosh Garrist was in no position to defend himself when Juliana took her free hand to his shoulder and pushed. It was a hilltop they were fighting on. Though it was far from a sheer drop, it was a long way before Garrist stopped rolling and sliding through the underbrush. The crew rushed to the edge of the drop to see what had become of their lieutenant. Groans and far-off cursing wafted up from below, prompting jeers and laughter among the men.
"Someone throw down a rope," Juliana shouted over the cacophony. Rope was a wonderful material, impervious to the damaging effect of being dropped to the ceiling when it and the floor switch places. There was rope aplenty in the stores, provisioners of ships having yet to grasp that the dagger strike had no rigging to repair, and little need for more than a token amount of the stuff. Trosh Garrist could not meet Juliana's eye when he was finally hauled up from where he had fallen. The blow to his gut obviously still hurt him as well, keeping him from standing upright.
"What now?" he asked.
"What indeed?" Juliana replied unhelpfully. "Well, I cannot take Lieutenant Trosh Garrist back onto my ship. That was part of the deal. The lieutenant can make his own way back to Cadrus, or whatever part of Cadran he wishes to settle in."
There were mutters among the men, but no one spoke up. Juliana walked over and picked up Garrist's weapons, giving them an appraising look as she brought them over to return them. She stopped short, though, doing a circuit of the lieutenant, giving him an appraising look as well.
"Of course, I do see some potential here. It would be a shame to waste it. If only you were not Lieutenant Trosh Garrist anymore."
Juliana took Garrist's dagger, slid it behind the golden lieutenant's emblem pinned to his uniform, and gave a flick of her wrist. The emblem fell to the ground and disappeared among the weeds.
"In fact, I see a lot of potential in this crew, but I don't think this is a job for a bunch of infantrymen and archers led by a sorceress. Do you know what our mission is?"
Juliana waited as a lot of noncommittal answers were bandied.
"No, our mission is to harry McGrin's supply wagons, to strike at weak garrisons, to pick off scouting parties. We are not planning to return to Cadrus or any other friendly territory except rarely. We will live off what we take from McGrin. Do you know what that makes us?"
She let them go longer at their guesses this time, hearing things like thieves and soldiers, her favorite guess being wolves, but that was not what she was looking for either.
"That makes us pirates," Juliana shouted. "It makes us privateers," she clarified, belatedly realizing that the more technically accurate term was also more confusing. "We have latitude to carry out our mission as I see fit. So from now until the time I release you from my command, you are all pirates, my crew. I can outfight, outdrink, and probably outgamble any of you,
and I invite you to prove otherwise. We will not fight fair. We will not give quarter, and we will not lose. We will eat like kings on what we can steal, and we will drink like princes from our enemy's wine cellars. She looked over to see eager gleams in the eyes of her crew. She had gotten their attention. Trosh, I will take you back as part of my crew, but the lieutenant stays here.
Aye, aye, Captain Soloran, Trosh replied glumly. Juliana wrinkled her nose.
Too stuffy, and I am not yet used to that name. Captain Juliana will do fine, she said.
Captain Juliana it is, then, Trosh replied, managing a smile.
Same goes for the rest of you. Cut those rank emblems off. When we start raiding supply wagons, pick out anything you like to wear. Silks, leathers, furs, whatever strikes your fancy or suits your tastes. If anyone asks you, you are one of the Dagger Strike Corsairs.
The straps fitted snugly around her waist and upper thighs, though the holds she used for the buckles were of her own making. Whoever had done the leather working for the Dagger Strike had not considered the possibility of someone so slender taking the helm. Juliana was tethered to a pair of posts that flanked her at the ship's wheel. She could not quite straighten her legs beneath her, allowing her to keep pressure against the deck even when flying inverted. The leather straps attached to the posts were pulled taut, keeping her hips from jostling to the sides as the ship banked and rolled. The ship's wheel itself was fixed in place, unable to turn. Each handle around the wheel was inscribed with rune patterns that activated the various controls of the ship, from propulsion to steering, gangplank release to defensive shields. There were also controls for the glass panel that hung in her field of view, suspended in a steel frame just past the wheel. It allowed her to see what was hidden by the deck of the ships, mainly what was in front and below them.
"Well, I don't know that they trust me yet. Merciful one, if I have not yet used up all my favors, just see us safely through the insanity we are about to embark upon," Juliana said aloud, since she was the only one on deck.
The crew was safely strapped into harnesses of their own, holding them fast to the walls of the outer hull, in reach of the arrow slits. Juliana let ether flow into the proper runes on the wheel of the Dagger Strike, and the ship rose from the ground, fighting against the growing strength of the rainstorm. Higher and faster it rose, the clouds growing from a vast theoretical ceiling to the sky into a bank of fog that they approached, and the scope of that vastness challenged the waking mind to grasp. Through the clouds they shot, streaking at arrow speeds, and into the brilliant daylight. Juliana let out a whoop of delight and heard it echoed from the crew below. The storm that had blown in from the Aliani Sea had dropped rain across half the continent of Coria. It had let up around midday, but had run long enough to fill Iridan's empty wine barrel with enough water to wash in. Though he sloshed about in ankle-deep water in his wine cellar hideaway, there were enough rat droppings, dirt, and who knew what else in there for him to dismiss it as possible bathwater. Iridan shaved as well, thinking that the scant ether it took would hardly be noticed. He had come to feel like a vagabond, and the ritual of shaving helped make him feel civilized again. He tried to justify it to himself as presenting a formidable, intimidating visage to his foes, but he knew it for vanity and could not swallow his own lies. It was nearly time for his nightly raid. Though sound military tactics would have had him vary the times from night to night, he preferred to get to his grim duties as quickly as the darkness allowed. With the advance of springtime, the days grew longer. Though he could not have noticed such tiny variances from day to day, he imagined that he could, and rankled at the increasing weight each evening. Soon, he told himself, they are getting weaker by the day. Those blade priests were a challenge, but how many more could they have? Once those run out, I'm free to kill at will again. They could have a lot more, he answered himself. It was a habit that had begun to worry him. They might send every priest in Safshan here for all I know. He noticed that his hands were shaking. It's not nerves, he told his hands. I just need a drink before I go. The wine felt good as it poured down his throat. It steadied his hands and washed away a headache he had not even noticed until it was gone. Iridan felt better, less irritable, and more able to think. He briefly considered bringing a bottle with him, just in case he needed it. No, that would be stupid. It's glass. It would get broken far too easily, and its weight would be awkward for fighting. Iridan collected Dragon's Whisper, and set off to find his knight's quarry. He took a quick surveillance of the vicinity of his hideaway for sources, finding only a few animals about. Nothing smart enough to pose a threat. No nosy neighbors to kill tonight, he muttered to himself. He hated disposing of observers, since he had to move the bodies as well, lest they give clues to his lair's location. The streets seemed quieter than usual as Iridan crept along the shadowed alleyways off the main thoroughfares. He caught glimpses of fire in the distance, more than just a torch or a signal beacon. He decided to take a better vantage to try to figure out what the cause was. Sheathing his blade at his back, he climbed a low wall and leapt to a nearby windowsill. He pulled himself up and launched himself onto the roof of the building next door, and from there to the roof of another building a story higher. He would have taken more pride in the acrobatics had Aether not done nearly all the work. There was a firelight coming from the central square of Mune. If the square had a proper name, he knew it not. It looked like a gathering by torchlight, if he was to guess. It cast the Magrin's headquarters in orangish light. He thought he could make out someone walking on the balcony.
Makto infusi delgaja, Iridan intoned. He hated that there were still so many basic spells he could not perform silently.
He touched his hands together, thumb to thumb, forefinger to forefinger, drawing them slowly wider. A shimmering field formed between his hands, magnifying the distant scene. Walking the balcony was a Magrin general. Iridan knew little of their hierarchy, but by his position overlooking the gathering from the headquarters, he might well have been the commander of the whole occupying force of the city.
"Hear me, Cadran Warlock,"
a voice boomed through the city, obviously amplified by magic. It startled Iridan, his foot shifting on the slippery roof tiles on which he stood. His magnification spell ended as he caught himself.
"I offer a challenge."
The voice spoke Cadran with a strange accent. The amplification and the echoing from all the surrounding buildings made any further guesses about its owner pure speculation.
"We may end this tonight. Defeat me and our forces will withdraw, rather than force you to slay us all. Single combat, upon my honor. I am Denshi, priest of the blade."
"So another of the bastards wants to take my head off," Iridan mumbled. "What sort of fool do they take me for?"
"You have 2 hours to decide."
Well now, 2 hours. There is a lot a fellow can do with 2 hours. A plan began to form in Iridan's mind, none of it involving marching into a circle of Magrin soldiers to engage in single combat. Instead, his thoughts turned to the figure he had seen on the balcony. The sewers were cleaner than he had imagined they would be, which was the one saving grace of his chosen route to Magrin headquarters. Iridan had gotten as close as he dared above ground before taking a detour to the waterways below. Sewers were a boon to the health of a large city, keeping offal from clogging the streets. They were also a bane to guardsmen, generals, and anyone looking to maintain law and order. They were places respectable folk would not go, and places disreputable folk used as highways, be they thieves, fugitives, spies, or assassins. The same measures used to keep those disreputables away also thwarted the civic efforts of the poor souls charged with maintenance, and the whining of civil servants was louder than the whisper-quiet passage of an illicit traveler. Iridan kept a close eye to the ether as he went, chancing no surprise encounters. He went so far as to draw the sources out of rats when he found them. Rat sources were as weak as mammals came, but it still made him feel powerful wrenching the wretched little sources clear out of them. Rat-killing aside, Iridan's precautions paid off. Roughly where he expected to find his destination, he found a pair of guards stationed to protect the way up. Guarding the sewer exit out of a building populated by military men was among the worst assignments Iridan could think of. He almost felt as if he were putting the two unlucky blighters out of their misery as he slew them. They died in confusion. Iridan's sound-deadening spell kept the brief struggle noiseless and prevented the crash of armored bodies from raising an alarm. As Iridan emerged into the keep, he scanned the ether yet again. The building was nearly deserted. He was able to avoid a few wandering servants and find a window to get his bearing. He knew that the balcony faced east and was on the fourth floor. Once he found which side of the building faced the torchlight from the square, he rushed for the stairs leading up. On the fourth floor landing, there was a large door to the east. It had to be the one. In the ether, he saw two sources within, neither strong enough to be a threat. Iridan tried the door gently, ready to hurl it back with telekinesis if he found it locked, but hoping to conserve both the ether and the element of surprise. It opened readily at his touch. "Cut off the head," Rashan had told him. It had been the key to Rashan's easy victory over Magrin when he had first conquered them. Iridan moved to make quick work of the source nearer the door before making his way to the one nearer the balcony, which he assumed would be the leader of the occupation force. There was a problem, though. Still watching in the ether, Iridan saw the weak source he was about to attack strengthen tenfold. A second bit of ether separated from it, shaped like a blade, blocking the path of Dragon's Whisper. That source grew a shield around it even before Dragonbone had struck steel. "Welcome, Iridan Korian, sorcerer of the Four Circle," his intended victim greeted him in excellent Kadrin. The barest, genteel hint of Safshan accent told him his opponent was another Blade Priest. "By the winds, just how many of you are there?" "And I am Warlock, Iridan, not some Fourth Circle," Iridan replied. He realized he was being goaded when his response provoked a chuckle. Iridan shielded himself in preparation for a battle rather than the assassination he had intended. "Myself and the one who issued the challenge in the square below. We are the last two here. You slew the others. My name is Tiba," the Blade Priest introduced himself.
Iridan took a respite from the ether to view his opponent.
He saw a man larger and more muscular than himself, though most taverns boasted a score each night fitting that description, dressed as his fellows had been. Tiba's features were difficult to discern, dark flesh in a darkened room, the only light coming from the torches at street level below. What stood out to Iridan was the one mismatched eye, whiteness reflecting back at him in the paltry light. He switched back to ether vision immediately thereafter. "My name is Iridan Solaran now, but you knew that, I think." "My thanks for that clarification," Tiba said. "It will sound much better when my life's victories are read, to have the correct name for the warlock I slew, and not the name of some cowardly nobody from a peasant family who was only Four Circle." The Blade Priest launched a slash-thrust combination that had Iridan backpedaling, taking him sidelong across the room, rather than toward either the door or the balcony. "You seem to know a lot about me. You have spies watching me or the like." Iridan tried to counterattack, making use of Dragon's Whisper's superior speed, but the Blade Priest Tiba seemed to anticipate each attack and have a parry in place and waiting by the time his blow arrived. "You Kadrans are arrogant, brutish. You think strength of arms or strength of magic is enough for victory. I talk to people, listen to people. I keep company with travelers who know both lands. I study my opponents when I know who they will be." Tiba launched a combination like nothing Iridan had seen before, even from two opponents. Tiba slashed, reversed his grip, and slashed back the other direction, then brought a foot around to try to trip him, made a thrust that Iridan had to parry, and used the momentum of the parry to bring the long hilt of his weapon around to slam Iridan in the face. Iridan's shield bore the blow well, but it knocked him off balance. Iridan stumbled against something, discovering a bookshelf in the wall he had been driven back against. As with the other Blade Priests, Iridan found himself outmatched in skill at arms. He switched his attacks to the ether before he took too much punishment against his shielding spell. He gathered ether quickly and launched an ether bolt at Tiba's midsection, hoping to blast him backward, if not win the battle right then and there. Tiba parried. Iridan's eyes widened in shock as the rune blade turned aside his magical attack. He did not react in time to get his blade in the way of Teba's next attack. The world spun as the blow hammered home against his shield. Again the shield held, but Iridan was hurled to the ground. Iridan gathered ether to him, drawing for all he was worth. A bit of it he directed into his fading shield spell. The rest he unleashed as hellfire.
Teba did not attempt to parry that attack.
Though his ether vision was not detailed enough to reveal his foe's expression, Iridan imagined with glee the shocked look on Teba's face as he set the room aflame. His own safe haven free of the blaze would not last long, he knew, but he could see by Teba's persistent shield that the battle was not yet over. Iridan tried to bolt for the door, but Teba cut him off, holding his ground despite the conflagration. "No escape for you this way, warlock pup," Teba quipped. It seemed the Blade Priest was willing to let both of them die in the fires, or at least bring it down to a test of shield spells to see who would last long enough to escape.
"Stay in the flames if you like," Iridan shot back, bolting for the balcony. It was four stories down and into the teeth of the Magrin army, including the last Blade Priest, but Iridan still preferred his odds there.
The Magrin commanding officer was taking refuge in a corner of the balcony, away from the flames. Iridan cut him in two before hopping up onto the railing and jumping down. The impact on his shield spell was worse than Iridan anticipated. Despite the spell, he felt something crunch in his leg. He collapsed to the ground.
"Stay back," a voice shouted.
Through the haze of pain, Iridan figured it had to be the second Blade Priest.
"Blade Priest, Teba."
The immediacy of his injured leg had distracted him from the thought of pursuit. He rolled in time to see Teba falling from the sky, heading straight for him, blade raised to strike. Iridan raised Dragon's Whisper, preparing to deflect the attack if he could. He drew ether like a madman, giving no consideration to his capacity. The abundance of idle sources milling about had left the square awash in ether. Teba's impact sent Dragon's Whisper skittering across the flagstones, broke down what remained of Iridan's shielding spell, but did not finish him. Teba seemed to sense victory, holding his rune blade high as he prepared for a decisive strike. Iridan's lips curled into a smile as he anticipated the wreckage of a man that would be left after he unleashed his spell.
"Juliana will never love you, monster," Teba said to him, venom in his voice.
Iridan's eyes widened in horror. His concentration broke for a moment, but that moment was too long. Through the searing pain of the drawn ether coursing unchecked through his body, he saw Teba's blade come down.